What happens in the San Francisco Bay Area ripples around the world, socially and economically. Welcome to Techonomics, a show with deeper looks at how outsiders are becoming insiders in and around Silicon Valley. This week, host Jason Middleton looks at a relationship from 100 years ago. That sounds a lot like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. We have an expert this week on how baby boomers can change careers in a less stressful way. Also, the economic recovery has been a seesaw for years, but the Fed still wants to raise interest rates. We'll tee up the next Fed meeting with a senior economist, and a new survey of small business owners shows there's no fear about a rising minimum wage after all. All that with host Jason Middleton is just ahead on Techonomics.
The American economy has been in a seesaw recovery mode for almost 10 years, and the Federal Reserve would like to return things to normal by raising interest rates. Good afternoon and welcome to Techonomics. I'm your host, Jason Middleton. Until last week, it was a pretty good bet that that rate hike would happen in either June or July. Not so much. In our first segment, we look at a national survey of economists about the state of the economy. And the senior analyst that conducted the research for Bankrate.com, Mark Hamrick. All right, cool. Mark, what is your name and title you'd like me to use, please?
Sure, it's Mark Hamrick, H-A-M-R-I-C-K, and I'm senior economic analyst for Bankrate.com. I'm in Washington, D.C.
We had a real clunker of a jobs report last week, which seems to have pumped the brakes for Janet Yellen and the Fed. It has been kind of a rocky, roller coastery kind of couple of weeks. What are you seeing from the Bankrate perspective?
Sure. Well, coming out of the most recent meeting, when we saw the minutes from the Federal Reserve meeting, it was widely thought that the Fed could be raising interest rates two, perhaps three times between now and the end of the year. Then we got a clunker of a jobs report earlier this month, which pointed not only to weaker than expected hiring in the month of May, but the previous 2 months ratcheted down. And since then, we've heard from Janet Yellen herself saying essentially that indeed that report was disappointing. And it wasn't so much what she said is what she didn't say in her public comments. She certainly did not indicate that an interest rate hike was an imminent probability in the meeting we have upcoming.
You know, I'm seeing a lot of financial headlines that kind of, they seem to be a little bit all over the place, if you will. One of them I'm noticing a little bit more, though, is that, look, we've painted ourselves into a corner with this quantitative easing and with the interest rate situation with central banks, which seem to be central to the entire world economy right now. Do we have any wiggle room here, or are we just supposed to wait this out?
Well, the real problem for the Federal Reserve, for our policymakers, and ultimately for the rest of us, is that the U.S. economy has been stuck in a growth path that has been subpar for many years, and we can measure that with GDP coming in at roughly 2% or less in recent times. We know that GDP in the first quarter was less than 1%, and so that means there's very little margin for error. The other part is that Fed Chair Yellen and her predecessor, Ben Bernanke, have been subtle but nevertheless direct in their criticism, basically saying that the central bank cannot be the only actor trying to help to foster growth in the United States, meaning they need some help from the president and the Congress. And we know that there's a huge political divide between those two sides, and likely that isn't going to be resolved until we get to the election, and we don't know how that's going to turn out at this point. So we're not going to have the big infrastructure projects that many people would like. Yes, indeed, the Congress did pass a highway bill, but that's sort of keeping a low bar on what it is that we'd like to have approved.
Speaking globally, when you think about the central banking situation, America's economy is pretty much the tallest midget right now. It seems that the ECB and Bank of Japan have gone negative. Is there any chance the Fed would consider something like that?
Janet Yellen has indicated that there's an unlikely prospect for negative interest rates in the United States. First of all, if anything, the Fed wants to take away accommodation, not add to it. And the other part is this is very untested. We don't know how it's going to work out in those economies where it is being tried. And thirdly, Yellen herself has said that she doesn't even know if the Fed has the legal authority to take interest rates into negative territory. So there are plenty of reasons right now why we should not necessarily be thinking that negative interest rates are an imminent possibility in the United States.
All right, Mark, let's jump to a new lily pad because you're a smart person and you got to talk to a lot of other smart people, those being economists, and I'm wondering where they are on this. You guys have a new survey from Bankrate, right?
Sure. Yeah, we recently published our latest quarterly survey of private economists. That's the Bankrate Economic Indicator, and they really do look for slow economic growth to continue, and they were thinking even then that the timetable for the next rate hike from the Fed would be in the second half of the year, and I think it's probably the fact that even since we surveyed them, they may be pushing that back. Perhaps the good news is that they do also see unemployment continuing to fall and a modest path of jobs creation over the next year. So, you know, we look for this slow, modest growth to continue, barring the truly unforeseen, and that's sort of what we're always on the watch for anyway.
Right, and we're back to the beginning, we're kind of where you need policy change. You need some guidance from the legislative branch or the executive branch at this point, it seems like. We're stuck at 2% GDP and our inflation is basically flat and wages are only up a little bit, then you're right, the Fed has very little gray area to work with here.
Well, and the prospects don't seem to be for much improvement, at least based on the tenor of the political debate. One question we asked the economists was, how would you rate the quality of the political discourse just on the economy alone? And we're talking about the presidential campaigns. The most common grade the economists gave was F. They did give President Obama essentially a C or C-plus for his stewardship over the economy during his two terms. So President Obama fares a little better than, let's say, the way that the political campaigns are viewed in totality here.
Right. And presidential election years do tend to have a bit of its own dynamic. What other headlines did you pull out from your survey, Mark, that you might want to discuss?
Well, one thing I'd like to point out is actually something that's occurred since we conducted our own economic survey, and that is the National Association for Business Economics polled their own members. It's a kind of trade group of economists, and there were two findings there that I thought were quite interesting. Number one, they said that the key factor likely restraining global growth over the next couple of years is the rising tide of nationalism. We know there's a vote in Britain, but between now and the end of the month on the question whether to exit the EU, the so-called Brexit vote. But we have this rising tide of nationalism in the United States as well, a so-called deglobalization movement where people seem to be much more cautious about the prospect of further trade agreements and the thought that maybe we need to look after our own people before we think about raising the living standards for people outside the United States.
I wonder if that TPP didn't help President Obama not get a B instead of a C+.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, economists generally agree that, and they aren't always in agreement on things, but economists generally agree that for the sake of growth alone, trade agreements are a good thing. But what I think we've learned in the United States is that it's wise to think about a holistic approach to these legislative changes. And what I mean by that is we seem to sort of pass the legislation first and ask questions later about the impact on people. And as we've seen the skills gap develop, particularly in the rust belts across the United States, where particularly older males have had a feeling that they just don't have somewhere to turn for a career after they've been marginalized by globalization. We didn't think that through to the extent that a policy was put in place to make sure that they had an avenue for further training, a way of bridging their own financial gap, which was created by some of this.
That's a very germane point to today's climate. You're very much right. We've been speaking with Mark Hamrick. He's a senior economic analyst with Bankrate.com based in Washington, D.C. So, Mark, do us a favor and get something done in D.C., would you?
We'll do the best we can, but don't bet the house on it.
Mark, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
Bye-bye. That was Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Coming up after the break, we'll look at a business partnership from 100 years ago that eerily sounds like the split between Apple co-founders Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.